Chris, we are here and we are live for episode 10, a little bit different than usual.
New setup.
Yeah, first and foremost, new setup.
Just you and I this time.
That's right. Something new as well. Usually we have an awesome guest here with us, but just due to some schedule changes, some people having to cancel, shift things around, this and that, we ended up kind of just rolling with the punches to where we have nobody this week. So,
well, we always talk about Amor Fati on this, right? When life,
that's right.
When bad things happen, you got to respond, and everything happens for a reason. So,
Amor Fati.
Got to do what you got to do, bro.
Love it. I constantly think of that now, especially like when we text and, like, you know, the certain things we were texting about this, earlier this week and stuff during the Cleveland snowstorm. I hope everybody, by the way, side note, anybody in Cleveland stay safe during that.
It was bad.
It's crazy. I love the meme from like the Day After Tomorrow movie where they were like, Cleveland.
You okay, Cleveland?
Yeah, that was funny. But nonetheless, just like when you would say stuff, it was like, okay, Amor Fati. Like,
yeah.
You could say, oh, unfortunately, it's not going to work out, or, oh, the home sold, or this and that. Unfortunately, well, like maybe, you know, who knows? You never know. Have you ever heard the story of the Chinese farmer?
There are probably a lot of stories about a Chinese farmer.
Sure. So there's one specifically that I learned and that I've heard. And in short, it goes like this. There was a farmer and his son. And one day, the son was out in the field taming the horses, and one of the horses got away. And then the whole village that night came back to the father and said, we heard about the story of the horse getting away. That's quite a shame. And he said, well, maybe. And then the next day, as the son was out in the yard or in the field with the horses, the horse that ran away came back and came back with four other wild horses. And the whole village came back and said, well, that's just great. We heard about the news. That's great. And the father said, maybe. The next day, the son was out there with one of the new ones trying to tame it, and it bucked, and it kicked him off, and he broke his arm.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? That night, the villagers came back and said, we heard about that. We hope your son's okay. What a shame. He broke his arm. And the father said, maybe. The next day, the recruiters for the army came, and they looked over the son because he had the injury, right? He didn't have to go or sign up because he had an honorable injury or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole village came that night and said, we heard what happened. Your son doesn't have to go to the war. He gets to stay with you. That's amazing. And he said, well, maybe. And the whole moral of it is just to essentially have the perspective on life of not judging something according to good or bad, a circumstance. You know, we look out at our circumstances all the time, at the external things that we see and believe that, oh, my gosh, that was a good thing that happened. Well, maybe.
Yeah.
Essentially saying you never know. There's the law of infinite possibilities in the universe, Amor Fati. It was meant to happen, the love of fate, something beyond us that in a way kind of is out of our control. I think we can control somewhat with attitude and perspective and this and that of the circumstances that happen. It's more or less our reaction to it.
Mm-hmm. I love that Stoic philosophy and the whole life to live in that, you know, that Stoic morale.
That's
and
right.
Everything. And it is very powerful, especially now. I mean, we're 26 years old, and we'll both be 27 this year. Life just hits you so much faster and so much quicker than what it did when you were in high school and everything. Because if you think about it, really, one of the worst things that could happen to you on your level in high school, maybe you get a bad grade on a test, or you know, girlfriend breaks up with you, or your heart's broken,
High school stuff, right?
Yeah, that was I mostly got made fun of. Probably not you. I'm just kidding. Yeah. But and then or you lose a game or a match or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Like in the grand scheme of things, those are really just to help prepare you for life. Like once you get a little bit older, but now that we are older, it's like, man, that stuff is real. That adversity had definitely helped me become who I am today. So it's like at the moment it really sucks, and you don't know what's going on in your adolescence, but then, you know, now we're in the thick of it for life. You know what I mean? And now we're, you know, knowing how to respond to it, because bad things do happen.
Yeah.
And it sucks because you think, like, why do bad things happen to good people?
Mm.
But, like, why does that exist? Why, like, if I'm such a good person, I do everything good, why should bad things happen to me? Well, that's not, like, how life works. Like, bad things happen to everybody, not just good, not just bad people. So it's understanding that and responding to that and understanding that, dude, Amor Fati, I mean, things happen like this, you know?
So Chris, remind our viewers again who it is we are and what we do.
Hey guys, both Dominic and I are loan officers here at Liberty Home Mortgage. So if you or anyone you know is looking to purchase or refinance a home, please email us at the elevateclepodcast@gmail.com. Subject line, looking to purchase or refinance a home. Email's in the description.
The perspective, as far as just allowing yourself, because here's the deal, is like you can look at it one of two ways, or maybe you could look at it multiple ways, but nonetheless, one of the ways you could decide to look at it is everything happens to me. I'm at fault. I'm the victim, whatever this and that. Oh, life sucks. There's things are hard, this and that. There's sickness. There's illness. You focus on that. Mm-hmm. But you could also very well put the perspective on, hey, listen, you know what? Bad things do happen to people, to good people, to a lot of people. And for a reason beyond what it is, I think I can even control or comprehend or understand. And I'm really starting to come to peace with the fact that maybe I'm not meant to understand everything too, mm-hmm. as far as what's going on here, what we're doing, why we're in the race of business every day and what's it for. And this, you know what I'm saying? Like with all of that and what are my goals and what do I expect of this life? And just more or less kind of taking, pumping the brakes on that and taking the pressure off and just allowing myself the opportunity to just kind of ease and ebb and flow through life.
Yeah.
So then saying, okay, amor fati, the love of fate, having the perspective that the deal fell through, good. Okay, move on to the next one.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe there was a connection you made through there. Mm-hmm. Maybe there wasn't. Maybe there was a lesson you learned. Maybe there wasn't. It's mm-hmm. just what it is. It's not something people, I think, oftentimes take those, the deal falling off, the person walking out of their life. You know, they didn't get at the interview, they didn't get the job. They take it as a happenstance happening to them, that they're almost like subjected to that and it's against them.
Yeah.
Where if you can think of it in that regard too, you can also easily shift your perspective and have the perspective of it was meant to happen. It's a setback to lead me to a setup, right?
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah, 100%. I do think that oftentimes this is one of my prayers every single night is that I learn to trust my closed doors just as much as my open doors. We can all run through open doors. That's easy. But how much can you still have faith in and trust in yourself and your process and whatever it is you believe out there to, when a closed door happens, to still have that faith? How much trust can you have in that? Because who knows what that leads to? And I think we have the opportunity, if you let it be something that throws you into a negative spiral and you think it's happening against you, it can lead down towards that, right? Mm-hmm. That's where your thoughts are leading and manifesting to versus the other route. Where conversely, if you see it as an opportunity, who knows what can come from it?
Yeah, you're just like, oh, I'm being affected by everything. And you know what I mean? Everything's happening to me, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. I mean, it's all really good, tangible stuff. I personally, like, I learned a lot of this stuff from Ryan Holiday, you know, the author, the guy who worked at, what was it, American Fashion or... the fashion company.
Yes. He was one of the
American Apparel.
He was the youngest
C-level.
And he was like on the board and stuff of these companies. Yeah, he was awesome.
But he went under Robert Greene's wing to and helped him. I think he helped him write one of Robert Greene's books. But then, you know, Ryan Holiday ended up writing his own books, like Lives of the Stoics, Courage is Calling, and so on and so forth. But I have to give him a lot of kudos just because I learned a lot about amor fati just from watching his YouTube channel and everything and just kind of learning from him. And a lot of that stuff is super, super good. So I would hate to just say, like, this is something I came up with. It's 100% learning from him, but it's so good. It's such good stuff, you know?
Yeah. No, you don't have to come up with it. I think a lot of it is... it's just work. It's all helping out each other. I'm glad that he has the confidence enough so much to put out content that you could then see it. You tell me, and then it's something that I can implement in my life that helps me. That's what I think is amazing about
that's
this.
Someone who I'd love to have on the podcast. Like a couple, like a, I don't know, whenever this thing blows up, like having Ryan Holiday or even Robert Greene on here would just be unreal. That would be my dream.
Robert Greene wrote which book that you keep telling me to read?
Yeah, 48 Laws of Power, Laws of Human Nature, The Art of Seduction, Mastery, 50th Law.
Yeah.
And live, or he did a new one, The Daily Law. He just wrote a new one, Daily Laws, which I haven't read yet. I will read.
Interesting.
Yeah. But super good stuff. Yeah. But even talking about today, so we're on this topic. I mean, when things just don't have, when, you know, things kind of take a turn for the worst, how do you respond? I mean, even what's happening right now in 2022, stocks are dipping. Mm-hmm. like a lot of asset classes are falling. Mm-hmm. Obviously, those will rebound eventually, you know, but in the moment, it's not looking too good.
Sure.
Mortgage rates have increased. Mm-hmm. The new 4% is the new 2%. You know what I mean? And now is not the time to refi. Refining is pretty much dead at this point.
Unless you need cash.
Exactly. So we're at a point right now in our industry, Dominic, where, dude, you're a home buyer. Like, you want to go ahead and purchase a new home. Listen, unfortunately, prices aren't going to go down. They're just not. If anything, they're going to stabilize or increase. Mm-hmm. Maybe not as high as of appreciation as we've seen in the last 2 years, but certainly it's going to go up. And to couple that, now your interest rate's not as good. Like, you could have been a 700, 750 plus credit score, low debt to income borrower back 6-12 months ago. You're probably going to get, you know, a lot lower rate than you would today. Now you're going to end up paying a lot more for it. But is it better than renting? Absolutely. It's still going to be better than renting, mm-hmm. and situationally. So it's kind of looking at those things from our perspective, like, dude, there are a couple companies out there that are shutting down their refi department. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? A lot of them are coming into purchases now to, you know, what our bread and butter is. So it's like, how do you respond to that? How do you, you know, like, dude, now I got to work twice as hard. Now I have to do all these different things now. I mean, yeah, it's just got to do what you got to do now. I mean, market's definitely taking more of a grind now.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, you know, initially what it does is causes like a lot of angst and, you know, like anything, majority of stuff in the media kind of tosses out like an idea of fear into a lot of individuals saying like, oh my God, did I miss my opportunity to purchase? Or, oh, I should just wait until down the road when things crash and this and that. Like, truthfully, I agree. I think if you're going to buy, still buy now. There's no better time. Because at the end of the day, if you just look at it very simply, right? 2 + 2 = 4. If you're putting X amount of dollars into rent versus putting into your house, okay, even if that home doesn't appreciate a dime, okay, you're still, and then you sell it for what it is you got it for, let's say, obviously minus cost, et cetera, you're still getting back everything that you put into it, majority of what it is you put into it. Mm-hmm. You don't have that opportunity with rent. Prices are higher, but like, you know, Chris, a lot of people say, I'm going to wait till they come back down or this and that. Could you give any insight economically as to why there won't be like this massive crash where homes are all of a sudden underwater to the point where people are in negative equity on their house?
I mean, it just goes back to elasticity in economics, where there, again, I think I talked about this last time, where there are so many substitutes for living. You know, you could live with your parents or family member, you could rent, or you could purchase a home, right? So now we're seeing one of the biggest people, our biggest pool of people who are purchasing homes these days are millennials. You know, that's what it was, 1980 to 1996 or something, right? Millennial group. So like right in that 30-year-old age range. Well, they're all either getting out of renting or they're getting out of their parents' house. Now they have down payment money. Well, there's a huge amount of demand in there now because, again, even if prices increase, well, there's not many substitutes for that. You're still going to end up purchasing a home. Whereas like for refinances, I don't have to refinance if the rate's high. Mm-hmm. It's very inelastic with rates for refis. But when it comes to purchasing a home, people want to purchase homes because they want the bigger living quarters and stuff like that, you know? So it comes back to that, as well as obviously the supply and demand issue. We're running on only like 2 months of actual housing supply in the United States, according to the National Association of Realtors. In a normal market, that's 6 months of inventory, which comes out to like I don't know how many millions of houses there are. When you have such a short amount of inventory like that, it's going to stabilize prices and increase prices. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? A seller and a buyer aren't going to be on the same page when it comes to the price. The seller's going to be able to sell it for whatever they want it for, based on the, you know, given that the appraised value justifies that.
Okay.
So, but the buyer's not. I mean, you're not in a market where you get to dictate, you know, I want seller pay closing costs. I want to close this date. You know, mm-hmm. I don't want to close next month. I want to close in 2 months. They're not on the same page. They're not going to be able to be in that equilibrium.
Sure.
So we'd have to have like, a huge, it would have to be significant, like a big sell-off of homes or
a massive influx of. Do you think that? So that's what it, that's what you're saying it would take in order to seriously drive down the prices to where people are in over their head on it.
I mean, I
just see. But here's the thing: is to me, if it's inventory that, or if it's supply that pushes it back up, I think it's much different than what happened like in 2008 when it was a massive foreclosure where the homes were literally they were devaluing. I mean, you had in your neighborhood, let's say, you had on the same street X amount of foreclosures. Yeah. That'll wreck a neighborhood's value.
Absolutely.
100%.
Those are all comparable properties.
That's right.
And when we had Brian Koester on, who had, you know, ran a very successful appraisal management company for like, what, 7 years? Longer than that, right?
It was longer than that. Yeah.
Whatever, 10 years.
I think it was 10.
10 years.
At least 10.
When he's talking about, you know, hey, listen, how we look at the value of a home is we're looking at a house within a certain, you know, radius of the subject property and saying, okay, well, this one sold for 350, this one sold for 325, this one sold for 400. It's all the same square footage within the last 6 months. This is, you know, we're taking a cost approach. We're averaging that out and saying this is, you know, this value that you have on the purchase contract meets that appraised value. That makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Well, when you have like all these houses that are foreclosing and people are selling at such a sale like that, well, what do you have to compare to? Everyone's comparing to those comparable properties that just foreclosed.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, in that case, everyone's foreclosing. It's gonna devalue everything. But it would have like, I mean, I feel like it would just have to be, I don't know the numbers, but it would have to be pretty significant to get up to that. Because even if we did have a significant amount of foreclosures, we still have a significant amount of buyers. You know what I mean? So I don't know. I don't know what that sweet number is where it would come down.
Yeah. But I think it's, again, just to kind of give reassurance that that is what the issue was. Because everybody looks at, oh, well, I'm waiting for this thing to crash again. It has to. Because you're associating it mentally back towards something that you either experienced or you heard about. 2006, 7, 8, 9, right? Around that time. So that's what you right away associate it to. But it's a very different time, economically even, compared to then. So if that's what it takes to drive it all the way back down to that, I don't think that's coming. Right? I'm not an economist, but I don't think that's coming. I don't think we see a massive foreclosure, kind of wave swipe through our country. I think if anything, if supply does drive up massively, like on a huge influx in a short amount of time, I think all that does, because of how many buyers are out there, is that attracts even more buyers. So I think it either constantly weighs towards the buyers always, where you're always going to have at least multiples now. I just think that's where it is. I mean, the generation buying right now, the baby boomers kids, right? No, Hesh always says it, the biggest decade for who? Because of Gen Xers, right? Millennials. Is it millennials?
Are you saying the children of, like we're millennials, are you saying the children of the generation of before?
No, Hesh always says this is the biggest decade.
Because for millennials, yes.
For millennials, that's why I was saying that, okay?
Yeah.
I was saying the kids of baby boomers, that's not what I meant. Millennials, okay?
Yeah.
If anything, that just attracts more people to purchase anymore. So that right there is going to obviously, I think it either, it weighs in the way of buyers, even if there's a huge influx of sellers.
You're right.
Right? And even if, because all the supply chain issues and this and that from COVID, let's say there's a massive influx of new built homes as well. That's only going to help propel even more selling, obviously, for then the people who are on their third or fourth home, ready to go into their forever or their second, whatever it might be, they're going to build. Again, you're just attracting more people our age and even coming younger than us right now over this next decade, where I don't think it's ever going to sway to the point where it's like it's going to dramatically drop prices and people are going to have no equity in their house that they actually owe on, negative equity.
Dude, there are too many advantages in the United States to own a home. There truly are.
Mm-hmm.
You have appreciation, principal pay down, tax benefits. You know what I mean? Like you look at – like when Dave Ramsey did his – he interviewed 10,000 millionaires – they looked at, hey, where are all your assets being held up? For like a good majority of those 10,000 millionaires, it was 401k and their home being paid off. So they have two huge asset classes that are helping you, helping your net worth. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It's not like that in other countries.
That's right.
You know what I mean? Like in the United States, we're taught, hey, this is the American dream. Get into debt, purchase the home, and you're living the American dream. Mm-hmm. In a lot of other countries, it's like debt is very bad. Like right. They don't have incentives like we do in the United States, where hey, owning a home is a good incentive for your taxes. It's there to build wealth. Other countries don't see it like that. So we're taught as as Americans, listen, you want to get into a home. That's the goal. Like you want to do that. You want to be able to say like, hey, this is your home. This is a house that you've taken on debt with, mm-hmm. you know? So I don't think that's like people are always going to end up purchasing because we have that type of that mindset in the United States. So even if there was a huge influx, like you said, like if there was a big influx of new construction or foreclosures, the millennials are still going to be, they're still going to be there. They're mm-hmm. still being taught, listen, it's still the American, I don't care what purchase, it doesn't matter how much you're paying for this house. Mm-hmm. Get the house. You want the house, you know? Mm-hmm. So
same thing with the rate too.
It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what the rate is.
That's why it doesn't matter. And again, that's why, like, you know, if you listen to our last episode, episode 9 with Melissa Smith, our VP, that's why her story involves being with Hesh in a purchase-driven shop. That's why he always stuck to that, kept it very vanilla. We're going to do FHA, VA, conventional, and USDA loans, right? Purchase-driven, okay? And look what happens when you go through these ups and downs in the market, such as what we're facing now, is because he understands, and it is just it's a clear fact, purchase is not, it's not rate driven in that regard. You're going to purchase. I mean, people were purchasing when rates were 14, 15, 16% mm-hmm. and higher. Mm-hmm. They were purchasing when they were 8, 9, 10. I mean, when I first started, I think the first one I wrote was like a 4.75 or like a 5.25.
Really? Mine was 5.75.
There you go.
And that was only 3 months. Yeah.
There you go. There you go. Yeah, it was. It was only 3 months, August to January. So, and that's why you see that happen. So you're going to see a lot of these mortgage companies flood over to trying to run these purchase shops, which is where it's wonderful to be driven, you know, or to be on the boat that's driven by an individual like Hesh, Melissa, Ian, you know, all them, Michelle, Amber, all them, just because of the fact that they understand the model that will outlast all of this and obviously help us all integrate into that to grow successful businesses. Because again, if you're just flowing with the market as to where it goes, and you were jumping over the ship of refis because there was a huge boom, you made a lot of money, you did well. Now you got to jump back over to purchases where it's a lot, it's just a different beast. It really is. Mm. It's a way different beast, which is why in that meeting 2 Mondays ago, he expressed those stats to us. And like he was saying that about that individual on, you know, LinkedIn who reached out to him or whatever, or made that post.
300 closings.
That's right. That's right. It's a walk in the park if that's the business you're in. All you have to do is sell the number. Mm-hmm. That's all you have to do.
Yeah.
Purchase is way different. You got to sell. You have to have service, which is why, you know.
It's huge. It's customer massive. Service. Massive. It's such an emotional. Like,
communication. The number's got to be there. That all equal. But there's so much more. And that's what I think has been huge in my calls with individuals as well, is just saying, hey, listen, whether I'm the person for you or not, make sure this is what you're shopping around for. We're all going to come in line with each other. We really are. We are. But you got to make sure that you're comfortable with who it is you're working with and build that relationship with that individual, because it's a much different process than just going through a refi. At the end of the day, you don't have to sign any dotted line. You live in the house. With this, you got moving trucks. You got your kitchen in boxes and this and that. It's very important on who it is you work with.
Yeah. It's that customer experience. Like John DeJulius on episode 5 or 6 that we had?
I would say 6. Yeah. I want to say.
So he had on, he's like, dude, if anything else, you may not have the branding, the money, or, you know, the thick, you know, deep pockets to be able to do X, Y, and Z. But the one thing you can control is just your customer experience.
That's right.
And I think that's huge, because buying a home is such an emotional process. Mm-hmm. Like even when I bought my home, I was just like, dude, when's the appraisal? Like, when are we getting that? You know what I mean? Yeah. And it is, it's nerve-wracking, because it's almost like one, you're getting further into your adulthood, you know? Like you have I feel like half the time in life we just have checklists we're checking off. Like, hey, I'm checking off going to college. I'm checking off getting married. I'm checking off getting the dog. I'm checking off getting the house. I'm checking off kids. You know what I mean? There's like almost I hate to be as like mundane as that, I guess, but
in the grand scheme, that's kind of what it is. I mean, obviously when you zero in, there's, I guess what I'm picking up from what you're saying behind that is like, rather than making it about checking things off the list, it's an emotional thing. Make it like an exciting thing for you in anything that you do in life. Mm-hmm. You know, you got to be more present, be in the moment, not just try to rush through things to just get them to just say like, oh, that's okay, I'm at that next stage of life for this and that. Those are monumental things, and purchasing a home is a very monumental thing.
I want to talk about that, Roy. You said like living more in the moment. That, haven't you been doing that? Like you've been being way more self-conscious about everything, haven't you?
Yeah. Yeah. So I think what I realized is at the end of 2021, I faced my version of, and I know there's so many differing opinions about what burnout is and this and that. You know, a lot of people will say, oh, it's a lack of motivation, this and that. And you know what? Sure, maybe that's part of it. But I think what I came to realize at the end of 2021 is that I wasn't massively happy with what I saw that, or with the goals that I feel like, kind of like the mimetic theory, that I feel like were put into me just from my domestication in life and growing up and this and that, and like what I thought I wanted to be successful in this and that, to realize that there's numero uno that you always have to take care of, and I let that lack. I slipped on certain things that allowed me the opportunity to feel like I was living a more fruitful life, right? So I think for me, what I have realized going into 2022 is I need to slow things down myself and not think so. It's good to have the big picture and the vision, but also to remind myself to be like, that stuff only happens and comes together when you're here in this moment. And always remember that you just have to take it one day at a time, one breath at a time, one step at a time. And also, I'm being way more easy on myself. I was being super, super hard on myself to the point where like I bogged myself down with stress on not completing certain things, to the point where days were just flying by. And it's almost like a blackout where you're like, dude, like,
you're sleepwalking.
What the hell? Yeah.
You're sleepwalking through life.
Yeah. And I don't want to do that just for the sake of money. I know there are people out there who do, and there are millionaire billionaires
God
out
bless
there.
You.
People going,
yeah.
Dude, God bless. That's fine. I see no difference in level of who it is we are as humans, yeah. But I think to me, it's just a matter, Chris, of just bringing things back within myself and just really asking myself, what is it that I want and why do I want it? And am I okay with the level of work or whatever the sacrifice it might be to get that? And if I'm not, I'm becoming way more open with accepting the fact that I'm not willing to put in the work it takes to be a multi-millionaire and own a big business. I thought that was my goal, but it's not. It's not.
Do you think that goes back to mimetic theory?
Yes, 100%. 100% it does. Absolutely.
How so?
Growing up, I saw my dad in business. I saw him, you know, have his struggles in business, his ups and downs and this and that, and thought that like, oh man, if I could, you know, I saw other businessmen out there that I emulated, my friends' fathers and this and that, and I thought, you know, damn, if I own a business, you know, I can help impact people like that. I thought that was a way that I would impact people versus in other ways that I'm, you know, feeling I can impact others in. So I thought business was the way where like, okay, if I make a lot of money, that'll alleviate a lot of problems and this and that, you know, where you get a taste of money and it's like, yeah, it really doesn't change all that much. All you do is you just have your bills paid and saved up in reserve. At the end of the day, though, there's always still the stuff within you that you yourself have to confront and work on. Money's never going to make that stuff go away, nor any of the experiences that you can allow yourself the opportunity to have from the money that you make.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just realizing that, like, and I'm glad I caught it early on. And I knew this going into it, but I think I allowed myself to slip away in pursuit of saying, like, oh, let me just go after goals, where now it's like, dude, I just want to be more so in the moment. Not saying I'm not goal-driven, but just allowing myself, just being easier on myself to say, like, dude, it's a journey. Like, Chris, we're 26. I said that in the beginning of the podcast. I have to remind myself of that constantly. We're 26. We're super young. You know, and the majority of our listeners, I believe they're around our age as well. We're super, super young. You may have massive aspirations to do big things in this world, and that's completely fine. That's awesome. You need that. But at the end of the day, like, don't forget you're 26, and the journey is everything.
I think, too, it's what do you truly want in life? And I think it's good that you have realization like that. Like, and yes, it does go back to mimetic theory. Are these my goals? Are these my goals? Or were these goals, you know, brought on to me because of my experiences?
Mm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
You may have the overarching goal of saying, hey, I know for a fact there's like, I'm passionate about this and I know I want to help people. Well, now you're being dragged in two different ways. It's like, well, I know that I've seen my dad and, you know, his business buddies, man, they've helped a lot of people. It's business. It's got to be business. I got to go to business. Like that's just the way I got to go. But that's not who you are. You know, that's not who Dominic DeFranco is. Like he's there to help people, but maybe it's not through business. Maybe it's
right.
Maybe it's this, maybe it's that or whatever it may be.
Mm-hmm.
And it may take time to be just like, you know, maybe it's a numbers game where you're just like, all right, well, I'm really inspired by this. And I really want to pursue this.
Mm-hmm.
This is truly something that makes me happy. And that was another one of my questions. And you said, like, my goal is to live a fruitful life. Mm-hmm. You know, I think it's, what does a fruitful life mean to you? You know what I mean?
Sure.
And I think that's huge. I think living a fruitful life is just being able to not sleepwalk. I mean, Param, who we're going to have on in end of February, talks about like just being a robot through life. You know what I mean? Like living your day in and day out is the same thing over and over and over again. You know what I mean? Like you're just, even if you're a CEO, you're doing the same thing. You wake up, you brush your teeth, you get in traffic, you flick off somebody in a traffic jam, you get to work, you do your work stuff, you come back, eat, and do the same thing over and over and over again. Like, is that living a fruitful life? You may be making $200 million a year, but you're working 7 days a week, you're never seeing your kids, you know, you have to be in North Carolina when your kids have a baseball game in Cleveland and stuff. Yeah. And I think you're going so fast through life that suddenly you wake up from the sleepwalk and you're 50 years old with achy joints. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah, and you get a whole bunch of realization.
So I think we talk about like goals a lot, especially in business. You do your SWOT analysis, your strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, threats. You talk a lot about goals. And I'm not a proponent of Grant Cardone, personally speaking. His 10X rule, I get it because, you know, you want to finish. I get where you want to finish. You'd rather finish 50% of your 10X goal rather than 10% higher of your, of your 1X goal or whatever it is. I personally think you're setting yourself up for a life that enough is never enough. Mm-hmm. Because if you just me personally speaking, I mean, it's just my opinion.
Speak your truth, brother.
That
absolutely.
If you live the 10X lifestyle, that you're never going to end up obtaining something that truly makes you happy. Like you may make $1 million and that was your 10X for you and you obtained it. But now there's a new goal. It's $10 million. And if you fall short of that, I think you just put so much pressure on yourself that it affects you in different ways, like familial relationships, economic, whatever have you, spiritual even. I'm just not a proponent of that. I like what you say, and I do the same thing where it's day by day, action by action, step by step. And I try not to let things affect me.
But like, it's gonna. It always will. It'll always be there.
Yeah, absolutely. Like things may happen where it sucks, but I truly believe like I just want to be happy, so I choose to be happy.
And you do. You keep a very good outlook. I've noticed that about you.
Yeah.
You keep a very you're very even keel.
I try to be. I just try to be like chill about everything. Like I know when to work. Mm-hmm. I know when to have fun. But like honestly, like I just enjoy having fun. You know what I mean? I just enjoy doing things that make me happy.
And that's good, man. You always should live those all the time. You know, I think, you know, here's the deal. We could have Grant Cardone sit right here and, you know, I don't even want to say the Elon Musk or the Jeff Bezos, whatever. They're innovators. You need those people out there. Are those guys, I mean, there are CEOs out there. Who was the guy that you sent to me? It said he meditates 40 minutes a day. That's what he attributes.
Ray Dalio.
There you go. Which is of who?
Ray Dalio owns Bridgewater Associates. It's Bridgewater Associates. Mm-hmm. One of the biggest hedge funds in the world.
Okay, there you go. He attributes it towards meditation, something within himself. So that guy is awakened to the fact that I am just. He's living in the moment, but he's constantly opening himself up to greater abundance and greater good that he can manifest in this life. He's not sold on selling his soul to money to where he's completely gone. Is a Grant Cardone maybe doing that? Sure. Does he eventually maybe get to his deathbed towards the end of life and say, damn, I wasted it all? Potentially. Maybe. Maybe he doesn't. Maybe he doesn't get it in this lifetime. I just know for me and the people that I surround myself with, you being one of those individuals, it's constantly like a thing on our minds where it's, I know that the pursuit after this is not something that I want to completely sell myself out to. There are those people out there who want to do that. Sure, that's completely fine. That's their journey. But me, myself, I'm too awakened to the fact that I'm here for something different, right? I'm not, you know, I trust. Here's my biggest divide and my biggest temptation. I have massive temptation towards money. I do. I really question constantly, like, what if I sold myself out? What if I just busted my balls nonstop and missed the kids' games and this and that? What if I did that? and I went and got the big house and the cars, and I lived the lifestyle that I see on some of these videos or this and that. Like,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's funny. You have a motivational video, and what do? They show yachts. They show money, the car. Like, as if that's the attainment. That's not the attainment. I know that I'm here for such a short and temporary time. That time could be literally when I get in my car today, or it could be when I'm 99 years old. My goal is to hit 100. Don't know why, it just is.
Yeah, me too. Yeah. I got to see 3 digits.
I want to. But nonetheless, and I know I will. But nonetheless, like, God willing, to me, it's like I see that as such a puff of smoke, the money, right? The money to me is just a medium of exchange that I need constantly in my life to be able to service myself in this life, to be able to thrive, okay? Right? You need money for food, water, shelter, this and that. I don't see the need to chase after money in such an excess form to the point where all I'm doing is setting constant goals for myself about money. My first year in business, you know, I made X amount of dollars. I said, okay, how do I make more next year? How do I double it? You go out and you do it. Mm-hmm. Then I said, okay, how can I do it again? And then I quickly sat back. I was like, holy shit. This is going to be nonstop. And I don't want that. It stressed me out. So I have to get real comfortable with understanding that my temptation will be towards that. And it might pull me sometimes. My ego is going to try and get me to the point of saying, oh, well, you're being lazy. You're not living up to your full potential, right? But again, that's something that I confront myself and have to say, like, that's not my path. I don't feel that's my path, and that's not my path. And I don't have to, I can live in the truth of being comfortable with that as well. And knowing that I'd rather see the day-to-day moments and say, rather than blacking out for 50 years and just making business relationships and this and that and making all this money and getting to the point where you say, well, holy shit, it all went by. What if in that time that person didn't realize the people that were there to help catapult them to different things, and they bypass those people, they brush people off, and you just look at them more as an item versus an actual human soul right next to you or across from you or in the room with you. Mm-hmm. And that's not what I want. I'd rather live I know a certain amount of money that I want to make. I have it in my head. I know exactly the amount that I want to make each year to continue on the path that I see my path on. Listen, here's the thing too. We talk about doing business stuff all the time. I'm very attracted to that and I want to do that. But I'm also way more invested now this year than I am in business in myself. Getting back to that, making sure my health is on point, my mental well-being, my spiritual well-being, because none of the other shit you do or any of the striving you do after any goal you accomplish or anything means anything whatsoever, means nothing if you yourself aren't there to enjoy the journey along the ride,
mm-hmm.
and to take in each experience and allow it to be something that is allowing you the opportunity to live a more fruitful life. You have to slow down and smell the rose. You gotta slow the hell down, be in the moment, and understand that even the person that you hold the door for at the gas station that smiles and says thank you, the woman, right? Take that as something as like a breath of fresh air, something to be grateful for. Mm-hmm. Versus if you're constantly moving. I mean, there were days last year I feel like, oh my God, I was running out of this office where I left and I was like, dude, I don't feel like I had a meaningful conversation with anybody. And if they even tried to have a meaningful conversation, I probably brushed them off like a dick because I thought that my time was more important because I was on the I was busy. I was on CEO shit. Like I was locked in. Fuck that. I hated that mindset of myself that I created to the point where I look back and I'm like, that's not me. That's not what I want, and that's not what I'm going to continue forward on. This is a journey, dude. There is no destination that we will ever get to. Grant Cardone or any of those people, or even ourselves, to just look at it for us. Mm-hmm. We will get to that destination, and then there will be a new one set. And is that good to strive for things to keep us along? Yeah, because nature, if it's either growing or it's dying, 100%, I'm with it. But what are you after, mm-hmm. right? What are you after? What is beyond that that you think you're going to get to that's going to help fill you up more? Because whatever it is, it's not there. It's something that you got to find within yourself along the way. And that's what I'm getting back to, is realizing that, because I knew it. I just let it go. It's realizing that and then even going deeper beyond that to allow me the opportunity to then have a more fruitful business, more fruitful relationships that are built on authenticity versus me just trying to get something out of somebody. Because I have a goal. I want to make $500,000 a year, so I'm only here for the business. You know, if we're not talking the money, I don't want to talk, right? Kind of mentality. See what I'm saying? So it's just getting back to just taking the more wholesome approach and understanding, man, this thing is a puff of smoke. What even is life, dude? We just show up in this suit one day and you know what I'm saying? As we close, I do have to 100. I've talked to Ian before I leave.
Yeah.
Got a loan blown up. But like, dude, we're all tripping a little bit. We're all wondering what the hell we're doing here. This life is crazy. In 2022, there is so much shit we are exposed to and see that I don't think people understand the traumas we just faced too. I mean, dude, there's so much stuff you could see on the news, in media, just life in general. We talked about earlier about how, you know, one of the things you just check off things as you go, but it's like, you remember as a kid, you looked up to adults, you were like, oh dude, when I get there, like, man, like they just get it. Mm-hmm. I look at the people around me now, and not that I'm better or worse than anybody, but I'm like, damn, these 45-year-olds are still trying to figure it out just like me. Mm-hmm. You know?
Very true.
And sometimes I feel like I'm a little bit more ahead, just like maturity-wise, mental, this and that. Some I'm like, damn, I look up to that person. I emulate them, you know, and those are the people that you should gravitate to look forward to in the future, mm-hmm. Who are grounded. But it's like, dude, we're all trying to figure this thing out, man. We're all trying to figure it out. And you got to slow down. You got to take care of yourself first and foremost in every aspect. And it doesn't have to be a zero-sum game where it's like 0 to 100 tomorrow. I'm going to eat clean, do the diet. I'm going to read this. It's like, dude, just be patient with yourself. This is a journey. This is a journey. Mm-hmm. And you should be grateful for every moment and understand that, because then it allows you the opportunity to accept the things that come your way and understand that there's really not that much effort you have to put in. Yeah. There's really not. Because the more effort you're trying to put in, you're just gripping the wheel of life, and dude, none of us can turn it. None of us can turn it.
I just think in the United States, we're primed like that, though. Mm,
that's right.
You know,
go, hustle, you sleep, I grind.
Exactly.
7 days, yeah.
Where it's like, you know, you don't have, like, I think one important aspect of life is being able to have a multitude of perspectives, mm-hmm. and understand different cultures, because they, you know, they obviously have different ways of thinking, and that's very gratifying. But as an American, you don't really have that luxury as much.
That's right.
You know, you don't really, we are taught, like, you know, hey, put it, you want to be successful. An easy way to success is just putting in hours of working overtime, you know, constantly working, and you get maybe a week vacation, 2 weeks vacation that doesn't roll over into the next year. You know, personally, that's not very fulfilling. Like, I think traveling is like a right. Like, you should be able to have a fulfilled life. You should go ahead and travel and get different perspectives. I think that's just like a very American thing, is just grind, work the 80 hours, you know, miss your kids' games, you know, get into debt. I feel like that's just very American, mm-hmm. of us, mm-hmm. which is like, I mean, there's good and bad things with everything. Like, I love our country, and I think it's, you know, we have an amazing setup. Is it perfect? No, but it works. And I just think there's other things we can do better. There's other ways of just like how to have a outlook on life. Mm-hmm. You don't have to have a fulfilled life. You don't need money. You don't need tons of money. Obviously you want to be able to have money to do anything that you know, things that you want to do. I don't know, like, it just, in different countries, you just have different ways of looking at life to, yeah. live a fruitful life. You're not, yeah. working as much to be able to, you know, live that fulfilled life. You have more travel time and stuff like that. Sure. There's obviously a give and take with everything. Yeah. So
I think the big thing to highlight of what you said is perspective, because here's the deal. I think a Jeff Bezos or Grant Cardone, because we better understand his attitude. I don't really listen to Jeff Bezos' interviews or anything like that. I just see his face all the time, his bald head.
Yeah.
And so that's all I know. I don't really see his character. Grant Cardone, I see it. I think a Grant Cardone who is more detached from the goal of money, and more just so looking at, like, him accumulating abundance and, like, giving back and this and that. Not saying the man doesn't, yeah. give and this and that, but if his attitude is different from a fuck you, pay me, savage type, I gotta go get it mentality, versus a, like, accepting the abundance that, like, the universe is flowing to, or that flows to him, and then it kind of going through him and him giving out to other people and growing certain things, just a different mentality. I think that's a different Grant Cardone and a more impactful Grant Cardone than how he is now in his attitude.
Yeah.
So it's not necessarily saying, like, oh, the capitalistic society or our society and our system is, like, what has to be changed. It's the perspectives. It's, again, just going back to, just don't forget that at whatever age you are, when you're in business, no matter where it is you're at in life, ground yourself in what really matters, yeah. right? It's okay to go out there and strive to be a millionaire, this and that, and to grow a big business, but do it for the right reasons. Again, have the right intention in mind, because anything you do out of an authentic place is gonna go way quicker, grow way bigger, and do that with less effort, mm-hmm. with greater ease.
I wonder what a Buddhist monk would, what his opinion would be on Grant Cardone's aspect of life. You know.
He's high energy, that's for sure.
I wonder if they would be like, oh yeah, this is your definition of success. You know what I mean? I wonder what he would, what they would say about that. Hey everyone, thanks for tuning in to this episode of the Elevate Cleveland podcast. Dominic, wrap it up for us.
As Chris stated at the beginning of this podcast, we are licensed loan originators for the best mortgage company in the land. That is Liberty Home Mortgage. Guys, if you or anybody you know is looking to purchase or refinance a home, doesn't matter if you've done this 1, 10, or 100 times, call us, email us. The email is in the description below. Reach out to that email. In the subject line, put looking to purchase / refinance a home. Whatever it is your goal is, Chris and I will reach out to you within 24 hours, and we look forward to helping you with whatever it is your specific home goal is. Thank you.
But yeah, I think we're about done.
Yeah, I think we're good. So here's our episode 10, a very unconventional one, but I have fun, Chris.
It was a good time.
Very good talk. Very good talk. I thought it was going to go much shorter in the beginning when we started. I have Jordan give me a 15-minute thing. What are we at now?
We're 45.
Cool. Hey, 45. We're
here.
Three
exit.
There it is. Next week, episode 11. We appreciate all our viewers. Thank you so much.